Paul and how he spoke to people out of a prison. Now, while you're turning there in Philippians 4, Paul's going to speak to us about how to give thanks and to have peace in our life. And he's writing this from a jail. I think it was a Roman jail, if I'm not mistaken. But he's writing it as he's imprisoned. And you would think someone who's in prison would be calling on people to come help him, but he's actually writing stuff to help other people. That's what he's doing in this passage of Scripture. And we need to remember that once a year is not enough to thank God. We need to thank God for our family, for people around us, for our church, for our health, for those people we know. We need to have a thankful heart all the time. And be thankful for what you have, and you will have more. But if you keep thinking on what you don't have, you'll never have enough. And that is a true statement. People who I see complain about the things they don't have no idea what they really do have. And we're going to talk about how Paul was in prison, even though he was in a place that he probably should have been complaining. He was actually helping us. He wrote all this stuff to help us in the times of need for us. So don't let what you don't have ruin what you do have. I don't care if that's marriage. I don't care if it's job, whatever. Church, don't let what you do have ruin what you don't have, because it will do it sometimes. Okay, Philippians 4 and 6. It says here, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. Now, last week we talked about the power of prayer. This is the third message on the power of prayer. And this message here, like last week, starts with three things. It starts with supplication and prayer. Prayer was a type of worship. We worship in God. When we come and worship God, we're praying. That's what that means, worshiping God through prayer. Tell Him who He is and what He's done for us. And then the other thing is we have supplication. That's a petition that you may need things in your life. We need things in our life, and so we ask God. That's petitioning. Last week, we also talked about intercession, where you're praying for someone else, and that's very important too, because we were told to pray for kings, all those that are in authority. When people have stuff going on, you can pray intercession prayers for them. That could actually fall under supplication because it is a petition. But then the third thing you have is a prayer of thanksgiving. And this is where Paul really begins to reiterate how important it is to give thanks. So when he says this, he says, I want you to give your request as thanksgiving. Then let your request be made known unto God. And it says in verse 7, it says, if you'll do that, it says, and the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds through Jesus Christ. Now, what Paul says is this: through thanksgiving comes peace. And if we'll start learning how to give thanks for what we have, there's peace that comes in our lives. The problem with that is the reason people can't have thanksgiving is because they're not content. Contentment, when you're content with things, it gives you a spirit of thanksgiving. When you have a attitude of thanksgiving, it brings peace. And a lot of people are not content with what they have. They struggle with the things that they don't have. And so they see all the things they don't have, and they complain, murmur, whine, whatever it is. I wish I had this car. That guy's got the greatest job in the world. I have a deadbeat job. We go all down the road of all the things that we don't have. And I thought about, as I done missionary work in Colombia, I'll never forget this, that the smallest of things to those people, those young people, especially those kids, we would take those friendship bracelets, and they were different colors, and they had little strings on the end. We would tie them around their wrist. And as we'd tie them around their wrist, they would run through the streets, and they would be holding it up. It was the greatest thing, just a small bracelet, just something with some color on it. They loved that. And so they would go tell their friends, and I carried them around like 50 at a time. And those kids would come, and they would stop, and I would put them on their arm, and they would smile. They were grateful just for a bracelet. Our kids complain because we don't have the latest Xbox in Christmas. I told somebody a while ago, we need to put them out in the street, let a car hit them, and knock some sense into them. That's a bad deal, Pastor. That's like knocking somebody out of a tree, or falling somebody out of a tree and breaking their arm. Our kids, a lot of times, especially with us, and we've learned the same thing, we have not been grateful for the things that we've got. We've always looking for something better. I know that there's people who's been given things for Christmas, and they look at it and kind of with their nose turned up. And you guys may have some family members that way. I'm not sure if you do or not, but you might get them something, and it's never good enough. So you just want to put a stick of wood in a box sometime and give it to them and say, here, this, nothing's good enough. Everybody has to learn the attitude of gratitude, and that's where Thanksgiving comes in. If we really realize what we had, I thought about Columbia when we'd walk down the streets and there was sewer running down the streets on the edges of the street, and there was kind of a ditch there, and it was actual sewer, and it ran down, it smelled bad, and there were kids that came out, and they lived in little huts and little places that had metal up there, and they would have dirt floors, and they'd be sweeping them out. But they were some of the happiest people and the people of the most gratitude. You could take a Jolly Rancher, a hard piece of candy, and start giving it to kids or them or whatever. You would think that was the greatest thing. Some of the parents would even come out, and they would ask, "Can I have one of those bracelets?" And I'd say, "Sure, you can have a bracelet." And so I would put it on their wrist. The ladies didn't have a whole lot of things that were beautified down there, so just a bracelet helped them to appreciate just the color of it. And I thought, we come back to the U.S. and we have everything. We've got everything we need, but yet we're so ungrateful at times of what stuff that we do have. And Paul here is sitting in a prison. And he's a guy who, of all people, could have been upset because God allowed him to be in prison, but yet he wasn't frustrated with prison. He was writing something so you and I would have something to actually go by. If he can do it in prison, and he begins to speak about the peace of God and Thanksgiving and all this other stuff in the world, then we should be able to take that and run with it. Now, this passage here says this. Go back to that passage of Scripture. It says, talks about Thanksgiving, and it says here in that, in Thanksgiving, it says that let your request be made known to God with thanksgiving. And then it says, and, next verse said, and the peace of God that passes all understanding. Now, there is a peace of God, and there is a peace in God. There's two things here that I want to tell you about. First thing, the peace in God is when we're born again, we're born into the kingdom. And so we have a peace in God, knowing that we have our names written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So when you come and give your heart and life to God, there's a peace in God, knowing that you are saved and born again, and you've got a hope in heaven. But there are a lot of Christians that I know who are born again who don't have peace in their lives. They struggle with all kinds of things. They deal with situations. They deal with things in their life. They're frustrated. They may have fear. There may be depression they deal with. There's a lot of things that they may deal with. And so they are in Christ, and they have the peace in God because we've been born again, but they don't have the peace of God. And the peace of God is like this. God is a God who doesn't worry about a thing. I'm not sure if you understand that or not, but he don't worry about anything. He's got it covered. And so the peace of God is totally different than the peace in God. Those people who are born again, who still struggle with all this other stuff, and they're not happy, and they're struggling, they're frustrated, they haven't known where they're going, and they know if they die, they're going to heaven. That's one thing. But there's a peace of God that passes all understanding, that guards our hearts and our minds, because there is a peace that God has that can give us, that won't even make sense to you, but it's a peace that no matter what goes on, nothing is going to faze you. You're going to have peace in that. And the world today needs more peace than I've ever seen in my life. People are frustrated, upset, talking about different things, and their suicides on an all-time high. There's no peace in anybody's life. But what we learn from that is, if we will learn how to give thanks to God, it says, then the peace of God that passes all understanding, the peace of God that passes all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds. Those, there's a peace of God that a lot of people never realize how to live in, because they're frustrated all the time. They're negative all the time. They complain all the time. They may be a born-again believer, but they're wine bags. And Paul's saying this, I am in prison, and I'm going to write you something here that will help you if you will understand what I'm writing. Now, history tells us this, that every 3 hours, they had to change the guard on Paul, because Paul was winning those men to the Lord every 3 hours. Well, you give him 3 hours, he could win them to Jesus. Now, that's pretty good. I don't know if I can always do that or not, but they would change the guards every 3 hours because they didn't want them being one to Christ, and Paul was doing it. So Paul, instead of being upset here, starts writing how to have the peace of God. Then he goes on to the next verse. Let's go to, first, if you will, before you do that, let's go to Isaiah 26:3. Just hold your thumb there. We're going to come right back to it. But look what Isaiah 26:3 says. It says, you will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you, because he trusts in you. In other words, when we trust in God, the peace of God comes into our hearts. No matter what goes on in our lives, we've got peace in our life. We can have peace in the storm, in the turmoil. I thought about Jesus in that boat. He's in that boat. He's laying back there asleep. And those guys said, man, don't you care that we perish? He's back there sleeping. Said, you guys are waking me up. He gets up, says, "Peace be still," goes back to sleep. I don't know if he goes back to sleep, but I remember when they were back there, they're scared to death, and it's not bothering him. He knows he's not going to perish. So you have to keep your mind on God, and you also have to give thanks in order to have the peace of God in your life. It's a peace that we don't even understand. I've seen people go through some struggling stuff, and they're good with it. They know how to deal with it. But let's go on to verse 8 now. That's what Paul says here in the next verse, verse 8. It says, "Finally, brother, whatsoever things are true, noble, just, whatsoever things are pure, lovely, of a good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things." So what's he saying? Is Paul a motivational speaker? I would say he probably is. He's telling you, quit thinking about all the things that don't have good reports on them. And I told you here a while back, I don't watch the news. I know in Tulsa, usually about every night, there's a, you know, something goes on, somebody getting shot or something. I can't think on those things. I have to think on good things and keep my mind clear from that. Now, you can watch the news, and we're different, and that's okay. I'm not saying you can't watch the news, and you shouldn't. You need to know what's going on. But for me, I have to make sure that my mind's clear. So I got to think on just like Paul did. Now, he's in prison. Now, remember this, writing all this. He could be thinking about a lot of things, but he's thinking about a lot of good things. He must have been thinking about a lot of us because he was writing it down. But look what verse 9 says as he goes on here. "And the things which you've learned and received and heard," and notice this, "and the things you've seen in me," things you've seen in me, "I want you to do them, and the God of peace will be with you." So they saw something in Paul, and he said, "You've seen me do this. You do the same thing." What was Paul doing? He was a man who gave thanks. He knew how to give thanks. He understood what it was to be able to give thanks. A lot of people don't understand how that works. You got to know how to use things to make it work for you. The Word of God has to be used, and so you'll have the peace of God. I thought about this story. It's kind of it's a funny story here. It says the father, he calls his son. The father's living in Florida. He's retired. They've been married for about 40 years. He calls his son and says, "Son, I just want to tell you this. Me and your mama's getting a divorce. We've been married for 40 years, but we think it's over. I can't stand her. She can't stand me. We're going to the attorney's office this week, and we're fixing to file for divorce." And the son said, "Dad, you just hold on a minute before you do anything." So the son gets off the phone, calls his sister. He said, "Sis, Dad and Mom's losing their mind. They're getting a divorce after 40 years. So she says, "I'll take care of that." So she gets on the phone, and she calls her dad and says, "Dad, what's going on down there?" And he said, "Well, me and your mom, we can't stand each other any longer. We're going to get a divorce. And I know we've been married 40 years, but we just wanted to shock you guys. It's around the holidays and all that. So we didn't want to upset everybody. We're trying to forewarn you." So she said, "Listen, me and my brother are coming down there. We'll be down there Wednesday evening. So you guys don't do a thing till we get there. You promise me you won't do a thing." And he said, "I promise we won't do a thing till you get here." So they hang up the phone. The father hangs up the phone, turns to his wife, and he said, "Mama, we got them coming home for Thanksgiving. What are we going to do for Christmas?" You got to know how to use things to make things work for you. If you're not thankful, you're going to have a hard time with peace. Thankfulness comes from being content. If you're content, then you learn how to have thanksgiving in your heart. You have to have a gratitude, an attitude of gratitude. And once you have thanksgiving, then you have peace. Because that's what the scripture said. If we pray with thanksgiving, the peace of God that passes all understanding will keep our hearts and minds through Jesus Christ. So it's that important. But people who struggle with being content will never be thankful. And those who aren't thankful will never have peace. There's going to always be a struggle. If your life is in turmoil, you need to learn how to be thankful. If you've got a bad attitude, you need to learn how to be thankful for what you got. Struggling with unforgiveness, you need to learn how to be thankful because Jesus forgave us, and we need to be thankful that He forgave us. If all is going wrong, you still need to be thankful. I was setting this a couple of weeks ago with a man who's paralyzed from waist down. And this is what he said. He said, "Max, I'm so blessed. God has been so good to me." I'm sitting there thinking, okay, here you are sitting in a wheelchair, can't walk, but you're wheelchairing around. But you're telling me how blessed you are. And I'm thinking, here I am. I can walk and get around. And sometimes we get our old sucker in the mud. Sometimes in the dirt, we kind of get thinking how sad it is or how bad it is for us. And we forget that other people have it a lot worse than we do. I thought about Ronnie Trenum. Ronnie Trenum still in the hospital. And I've talked to him so many times. He's been so upbeat. He's never down. He's always confident. He's always positive about everything he says. And I was watching him last night on the commercial there, watching the OU game. How many of y'all were praying for the OU game? We can't beat nobody, y'all. I'm sorry. But anyway, we need to pray for that. I guess we're thankful we got a football team. But anyway, but he was on that commercial, and I thought how positive he is about the stuff he's went through. He's defeated cancer 7 different times, and now he's dealing with it again. And so, but he's always upbeat. You never hear him say, woe is me. I wish I wasn't in this position. He's always asked us, how you doing? What's going on in your life? And I thought of great men that I've been around my whole life. I thought about Lawrence Eagle was one of them. I would go down there to pray with Lawrence, and even on his deathbed, he would be telling me, hey, God's been so faithful to me. He's been so good. He's blessed me. He's always taken care of me. And I went down there to encourage him. And when I left, I was the one that was encouraged. Why? Because he was the one being thankful for all the stuff. And you say, well, you're in a pretty bad position, Brother Lawrence. But I'll assure you today, he's in a better position there than he's ever been down here. Because he was thankful. He knew who God was. And other men that I've learned, I got another friend who's had some toes amputated. He has cancer. And he's got congestive heart failure. And he's got other stuff going on in his life. His mind's getting messed up. Dementia's messing him up. And I go down there and pray for him. And this is what he prays. This broke my heart. He's got to pray. And he said, God, you've been so good to me. I've been so blessed just to have known you. You've been so good to me and my family and how you provided for me. And I get to praying for him. And then he's praying for me. And next thing you know, when I leave, I'm thinking, man, that guy's got it going on. He may be messed up a little bit physically, but spiritually, he understands who God is. And he understands what thankfulness is. And when you leave there, you feel like you're walking on cloud 9 because somebody who's in a worse position than you begins to pray for you, just like Paul was in a worse position than we are, but he begins to write to us so we will have something to go by. That's what you call being spiritually mature, y'all. We have to learn how to be content with the things we have. Contentment always brings thankfulness. Thankfulness always brings peace because that's just the way the formula works. I don't know how it all works, but I know it does. You know, we complain about our house sometimes. There's people in Columbia, when I go see them, don't have a house. There's people in Columbia don't have a job. There's people that would love to have your job. I remember going to those places like that, and they stand in line hoping they can get a job. They may stand there all day long hoping somebody will say, hey, I can use you today. They don't have a job. We can go anywhere we want to in the U.S., and there's signs up everywhere that says this. Help wanted. Help wanted. We can't find people to work. And they're down there dying for a job. What do we see? It's all in how you see it. It's the same situation. A man in a wheelchair, the situation is the same. I see it one way. He sees it another. Lawrence Eagle laying on his deathbed. I'm seeing it one way. He's seeing it another. The situation's the same. It's all in how we see things and how we perceive it and how we relate to that. But it's got to be, we have to change our mindset. We got to get to where we're content with what we have. You say, well, I hate the car I got. There's people in Mexico who would love to have your car. Say, well, it don't run. I promise you, you give it to them, and in a week, it'd be running. You cannot believe what those guys can fix with nothing. They take nothing and make carts and stuff. I remember the man that I told you this story one time before. We were in Colombia, and at morning, we were staying in this pastor's house, and it was kind of a little overhang there, and we slept upstairs. It was so hot, but in the morning, about 4:30 or 5, I would get up, and it was the daylight was just breaking about 5:30 or 6, and there was this one man, and he had a little bicycle wheels on a he'd made a hand deal with a cart somehow or another. I don't know, but he had some boards on it and handles, and it was homemade. But on this cart, every morning, he would have about 8 or 10 fish. He would fish all night long. And of a morning, he would come up through there at the street, and he would stop in the street, and he would take a couple of fish, and he'd go to a house, knock on the door. They'd give him a couple, 3 eggs. He'd trade out, go down to the next house. And I watched this every morning. I was there for about 3 days. And every morning, same thing. He would go get enough stuff. He'd get an avocado from somebody, and then he'd get some firewood to burn to help cook his fish. And then he might get something else. But he had little things there. By the time he got up to the end of the street, he would have 2 or 3 fish left. An avocado, maybe some wood and some eggs and maybe a grapefruit or something. But at the end of the deal, he would have enough to feed his family for that day. And we go through McDonald's and get fast food and don't even think anything about it. He fished all night long just to keep his family alive. And we wonder, why is it? Because he never thought a thing about it. He was just happy to be there. Those people in Colombia and Mexico are some of the happiest people you'll ever meet, and they're the poorest people you'll ever meet. But they see it totally different than you and I see it. I remember one time we went to Mexico, and we were building a church down there, and the lady comes, stood on there. She said, God promised me this church 20-some years ago. And she stood on the slab they had poured. It was about a half a foot out of square, but it was good. We got the thing put on there. They poured it by hand, the whole cement thing by hand. And I remember going out there, and there was some of our guys here in church that went with us, and I remember looking down there, and there was a little woman, and she was out there, and they were fixing something on this grill, and they were using fire, and they had an old piece of just some wood under there, and they had a piece of just flat metal, and they were making tortillas, hand tortillas. They were putting tortillas on there. And then there was something else on there that we couldn't tell what they were, and the guys were a little bit concerned because I told them, it doesn't matter what is down there, whatever you're going to do, it's their best. They're going to feed it to us, and we're going to eat. Care what it is. You're going to have to learn. If you can't do that, you don't need to go on this trip, because they'll give the very best they got to feed you because they're just glad you're here. And there were some things laying on that, they were cooking it on that thing, and it was big up here and kind of come down to a little point here and had a little tail on it about that long. And one of the guys says, Pastor, what do you think that is? I said, I don't know. What do you think it is? He goes, Pastor, it looks like a rat. And I said, well, if it is, it's going to be the first time we're going to eat rat. We're eating it. He said, I know that's what you told us. And he said, if it's a rat, I'm going to eat it. I said, we're going to eat it. And we're out in the middle of the desert, nobody around. I mean, it's just out in the middle of nowhere. And I walked over there, and I got close, and I got to looking, and it was in big poblano peppers. I heard the whole crowd go, ugh. And I'll tell you, it was the best Mexican food I've ever eaten in my life. They had that thing stuffed with ground beef and rice, and I don't know what all was in there, but those guys looked at me and said, this is the best rat I ever ate in my life, I promise you. Tortillas were fresh. They were fresh off that thing, and they would stack them up in stacks this high, and they were fresh. Man, they were good. And it was just the best food. But they were so proud, and he said they'd spent up for months, saved up their money for months to feed us because we were going to build a church. Then one of them asked me, could we have a glass or a bottle of that cold water? Because they didn't have cold water. By the time they'd walk to the well 3 miles away and bring the water down there, it would be warm. Now, they could drink it down there cold, but they'd never had a cold bottle of water to eat with. So every morning I'd take those women bottles of water. And I thought about that scripture that said, anybody that gives a bottle of water in my name won't lose a reward. Those ladies had never had a cold bottle of water their whole life. They thought that was grand because down there when you drink pop, you just pour it in a cup and drink it. It's hot. That's just the way you drink it. They didn't know. But see, we take things so for granted. We're upset because we don't have stuff in the refrigerator. You know, our kids say, I don't like that. I don't like that. Your kids ever say that for supper? I don't like that. Spaghetti and meatballs. I'm one of those guys that go, I need it, but I need meat. I need a meatball that's this big around and the spaghetti this much. But then someone else from a third world country looks at that spaghetti and goes, man, that would be great just to have that on my plate. It's all in how we perceive it. Everything is how we look at it, whether it's half full or half empty. It's all in how we look at it. I thought about an exclusive private school near California, Silicon Valley. A third grade teacher was lecturing her class students about the ones who are less fortunate. And she said, class, I want you to write an essay about a poor family in the area. And so they did. One young girl's paper began like this. Once upon a time, there was a poor family. The father was poor. The mother was poor. The children were poor. The butler, he was also poor. The pool man, he was poor too. The personal trainer was poor. The personal music teacher, she was poor. The gardeners were poor. And the seven farmhands that were all there, they were poor too. This was a very poor family. See, we perceive it differently sometimes than how it could look from somebody else. Somebody else may see it one way. We see it another. You know, you can have a traffic wreck and five witnesses and all of them will tell you something different. It was his fault. No, it was theirs. It was theirs. Everybody sees it different. But I'm here to say this to you today. We have to have a heart and an attitude of gratitude. Our job that you don't care for, somebody else would love to have it. Your spouse that you're fussing with and fighting with, somebody else would love to have them. It's true. The things that you have, your house and Your health, people, you think about your health and people that are healthy, like, man, I'm healthy. And then I go see people that are not healthy, and I think, man, I'm so blessed. But yet they tell me how blessed they are. They see it different than I do. It's all in how we perceive it. So thankfulness is all in the heart. It's not in the circumstances. And we need to have a life of thankfulness all the time. Just be thankful. If you can't pray for anything else when you get up a morning going to work, maybe you hadn't had time to pray. We talked about praying for a while. Just start thanking God for just being able to get up. Just like, God, I was glad I could get up and put my pants on and my boots on, and I can actually drive, and I've got a place to come to worship, and I got a family, and I've got food in the refrigerator. We got places. We just need to learn how to have a heart of thanksgiving and have a heart of thankfulness, the attitude of gratitude. Because once you become content, now there's a difference between being content and being complacent. Being complacent is you couldn't care less what you had or whatever. I'm just going to stay with this. I don't care. Whether it be spiritually, job-wise, whatever. That's complacency. Being content is this. I know that I need a better job, and I know God's going to take me there, and I'm going to get a better car and a better house, whatever. But right now, I can live with what I got, and I can be happy with it. But I'm looking to something else. There's nothing wrong with bettering ourselves. We need to continue to better ourselves in every area. But once we have contentment, then we have thankfulness. When we have thanksgiving, then there's a peace of God that passes all understanding when we begin to pray with thanksgiving. And all of a sudden, that place that you're in contentment, people say, I don't see how they live in this. Well, I don't like it either, but I'm fixing change, but I'm not going to gripe till I get something else. I'll learn how to be content. That's how we do it. Turn to 2 Corinthians, if you will, chapter 11. We're going to finish up with a couple of passages of scriptures here. And let me say how Paul here, you got to remember, he's in prison writing all this stuff. Now, he wasn't in prison, I don't think, when he was writing the church of Corinth. But this is what he says. He's talking to them about how he knew they tried to help him, but they couldn't. He understood their lack of opportunity. So he says this. He says in 24, he said, I know that you guys have tried to help me. And he said, but this is what I've endured. He said, from the Jews, five times I've received 40 stripes minus one. The Jews could not whip anybody with 40 stripes. They would always do it with 39 because they might have miscounted. So making sure that they didn't go 41, because that was against the law, supposedly, for the Pharisees and all those hypocrites, those legalized guys. So they would give everybody 39 stripes, because if they miscounted, it still left them not going over 40. So he said, five times I've been whipped 40 stripes minus one. Now let me say this to you about Jesus. Jesus got whipped by the Romans, so they didn't have the same rule. They just whipped him unmercifully till they got through. So it was a little different when Jesus got whipped than when Paul got whipped. Paul received five times, he got 39 stripes. Next verse. He goes on to say, three times I was beaten with rods. Those rods were something that was real, they were real flimsy, they were flexible. And so when they hit you, it was like it was real sharp, but I mean it was round, but they would hit you with real, it were hard and make big whelps on you. Sometimes it cut you. But he said, three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Not marijuana stone, but stoned with rocks. Okay? I'd have went through that. I'd have probably wanted to be stoned, probably. Marijuana stone. But he said, I was, race all that off Facebook, will you? Once I was stoned with rocks. Once I was stoned with rocks. They hit me with rocks, is what he's saying. Three times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I've been in a deep, where it's one place over an axe, they floated around there a night and a day, I think, just hanging on a piece of wood, just trying to survive. And he goes on to the next verse there. In journeys often, in perils of water, and I'm going to say perils is troubles, basically, in troubles of robbers, trouble from my own countrymen, trouble from the Gentiles, troubles in the city, trouble in the wilderness, trouble in the sea, trouble amongst false brethren. Man, he's had a lot of problems. In weariness, it goes on to say, in weariness and toil and sleeplessness, often. In other words, I didn't get enough sleep sometimes. In hunger and in thirst, he didn't always have enough to eat and drink. In fastings, often. In cold and nakedness. In the prisons, a lot of times there wasn't any heat. He asked one place over somebody to bring him a coat because he was cold. So he went through all of this. And besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. He was thinking about the churches the whole time all this stuff was going on. That's why he's writing about this in Philippians to us as the church, because he wants us to be strong and understand how our minds should operate and how we should be thankful. In all of that, he said, I went through all that. But even through all that, look what he says in this last verse here. Who's weak? Am I not weak? Who's made to stumble? Am I not burned with indignation? And in verse 30, he says, if I boast, I will boast of the things which concern my infirmity. In other words, I'm just going to give God all the thanks because everything that I go through is not for me, it's for God. I'm not worried about those things that I can't change. I've been through some hard times. And now, let's go back to Philippians, the 10th verse, and go back to chapter 4 in the 10th verse. I showed you all of that. He went through all of those things. Now he's in prison. And yet he's writing to us, a church, that we can actually read what he's saying. And he's saying, I need to be thankful. That's what you need to do is be thankful. But before you can be thankful, what do you got to do? You got to be content. So look what he says here in this passage in Philippians 4:10. I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now your care for me has flourished again. You did care, but you lacked opportunity. That's what he was telling those guys. You cared for me, but you couldn't get there to help me. That's what he was telling the people of the church there. Next verse, verse 11. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I've learned in whatever state I am to be content. No matter what I'm dealing with, there's nothing wrong with wanting something else better. But while you're waiting, don't be frustrated. Don't be negative. Quit saying negative stuff. People talk negative all the time. If whatever our mind thinks, that's what he said, think on these things. Because once we think on them, then we start taking them to heart. Once it goes into our heart, then from the abundance of the heart, what happens? We begin to speak it out. So if you're thankful and you think on good things and you keep thinking how good God is, just like those men I've talked to you about, Lawrence Eagle and the friends I've talked to you about, those guys who might not be in as good a shape as I am, but because they think the way they think, they begin to speak out good things and say, God's been so faithful to me. I'm so glad God's here. He's always helped me. He's always taken care of me. All those things come out because that's how they've been thinking. They never think, woe is me. Wish I could just get up out of this wheelchair. And I wish I could just get up and walk. I wish I had my feet back. I wish I had all this other stuff. They're thankful to have known God and still says that God's thankful, that God's faithful to them. It's a mindset. It's the same situation, but how do you see it? The only way we're going to see it is till we learn how to be content with what we have. Then thanksgiving begins to come. After thanksgiving comes the peace of God that passes all understanding. It's the only way you're going to get it. And I can't tell you any other formula but that. Paul gave it to us, and if we can read it and understand it, it'll work for us. It'll work for us. I want you to bow your heads this morning, if you will.